Welcome to CyberChump, Scientists in the Trees, an Eclectopian special. Welcome again. I'm Jim Lang. They call themselves CyberChump. Who are they? And what kind of music do they make? To begin fairly, I didn't discover CyberChump. They discovered me. I had received a compilation from a record company specializing in ambient electronic music. Soon after, I got an email from someone who told me that their group, CyberChump, had a cut on that same compilation, and would I like to receive their CD? Well, I never say no to CDs. What I heard from CyberChump was not only good, but also different in many ways. They had a diverse sound, a sound that was different for each album. This puzzled me. They also had something I hadn't seen much of in the electronic music scene, a sense of humor. Then there was that name. Why? Why call yourself CyberChump? I had to find out. Weeks passed and emails were exchanged until we could agree on a night for an interview. So, on a rainy March evening in 2004, myself and CyberChump, aka Jim Skeel and Mark G.E., had a long conversation exploring their history, how they work together, and the unique music they make. Just to clarify a technical point for the listener, Jim Skeel is in your left speaker and Mark G.E. is in your right. Well, when did you guys first realize that you were insane?
Well, you know, I would think part of being insane is probably never realizing that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So we may not really be as aware of how insane we are. But Jim and I have been working together since the mid-80s. And I think at that point, we pretty much realized something was wrong.
Yeah, well, the first recording that Mark and I did, we knew we were definitely something was wrong because Mark showed me a violin he had borrowed, had no idea how to play. I said, well, let's use that as an instrument. And we sampled it in a 16-second delay in a number of ways, and then it ended up on the Abstract Air, actually.
A rather Bowie-esque approach to composition.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I've never really let not being able to play an instrument get in my way of being a musician.
I just think you guys are really fascinating because, first of all, the name. In a way, do you guys regret using that name? Or how did you come up with that name? Because doesn't Chump sort of imply something lesser than, you know, cool? Or
exactly. Exactly. That's exactly it. Well, it was the early 90s, and there was this term going around called, you know, cyberpunk. And then we were putting together our work back around 92. We really kind of started in earnest, kind of consciously knowing that we were putting something together. And, you know, the internet was just getting started, and we were thinking about terms like Supertramp and Supergrass and, you know, Steely Dan and that kind of stuff. So like a throwback to the 70s and cyberpunk, and it just seemed like a riff on that.
Yeah, I think, and also we, you know, Chump was used, you know, we were kind of making fun of ourselves. You know, we were just chumps doing music, you know?
That's right. You know, we did this again today. We spend hours in the studio, you know, and it used to be, now it's on software, but back when we first started, you know, we spent hours behind a console trying to figure out where this wire would go, you know, where it's supposed to be plugged in. And, you know, if that doesn't make you feel like a chump.
Yeah, we could never do this for a living. We've decided that.
Right. We thought, you know, if somebody would actually pay us for this, we would be very inefficient. Because we
you're not paying valuable studio time here, expensive studio time, I take it.
I think we spent 3 hours today just trying to edit a loop.
We finally got it.
We actually, you know, after a couple hours, we sort of break down and decide somebody should pull out a manual. Then the other person usually argues and says, forget that. You're not supposed to, you don't have to read the manual. And then another hour later, we may actually both read the manual. So,
or give up and go get a beer or something. No, well, sensible.
We talked about that.
So you guys met back in Kansas City, Missouri. I got that from the website. Is that
right?
That's right. Now, how did you guys meet?
Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah. I was in a band called Short Term Memory in Kansas City. I'd moved up there from Wichita. And Mark, our first band I was in that kind of made any kind of recording was a band called Short Term Memory. And we had put out a cassette and got it into, I don't know, Sub Pop or I don't know what magazine was in. And Mark saw it and he was coming down to Kansas City to go to school, and he was kind of figuring he's going to be lonely. So he writes us a letter that, hey, I'm moving to Kansas City. I'm going to be going to school down there. I got this band called Exposed Foreheads and heard your stuff was really great. And why don't you give me a call sometime? And we did. We went over to his house on a Saturday night figuring he'd be, you know, lonely and bored. And he certainly was.
I had just gotten to town and I didn't know anybody. I mean, I knew nobody in Kansas City. And being from Milwaukee, I'd never been south of Chicago. So that was already a culture shock going to Kansas City and in August, you know. So, and I'm sure West Virginia is the same way. You know, it was just very hot and just very much a culture shock. So, yeah, I got down there and I had this band, Exposed Foreheads. And it was really just sort of, singing like, you know, being in the Wall of Voodoo, you know, that sort of thing, and maybe the B-52s thrown in there and some Cramps, you know, that kind of attitude. But down in Kansas City, what Jim was involved with and what a lot of other people did was just very serious. I thought it was real serious. They seemed to be, you know, musicians who, you know, if their guitar was in tune. So
shocking.
In Milwaukee, you know, it's the home of the Violent Femmes, so we come from a very different perspective.
So is that what the scene was like then when you guys...
Yeah, the Violent Femmes had just broken in 1983, so they had their first album out, and they were here from Milwaukee, so a lot of the stuff here was sort of had a wacky quality to it.
Yes.
And a lot of fun, but in Kansas City, they were doing multimedia events, you know, with film strip shows, and you know, everybody had actual instruments, electronics, and things like that, so it was a very different feel.
But we still played with toys. I mean, Short Term Memory was a total electronic band. We started out with the electronic drums, or the Mattel electronic drums where you push the buttons and got the different beats. So, I mean, we kind of played around with toys, but it seemed a little more serious to Mark, I think.
So I think it actually, that might have been part of our connection, is that we were both interested in experimental music, you know, some listening to a lot of the similar kinds of things. We had both really been influenced not just by a sort of experimental electronica, but I think Jim and I really had a love for Brian Eno. So that kind of brought us into thinking about the studio as an instrument and thinking about atmosphere and that sort of thing. And if you listen to our music, there's an awful lot of sub-atmosphere going on in what we're doing.
The first album is called Dreams Grooves, released in 2000. I asked about how they worked together on this album. Well, you guys have four albums, right?
Yes. Right. The first one was put together as we got together. In fact, we had different kinds of recording mediums at the time, and we hadn't really gelled where we got the same equipment so we could just trade things, you know, back and forth.
Right. In fact, Dreams Groove was probably recorded over a period of 8 years. We didn't know we were really doing a CD, and then by the time we had all this stuff, we thought, oh, let's put it together. And the real challenge was, how do we put it together in some cohesive manner? Because the two of us are real fans of of albums that hold together as a experience, you know, as a trip that we can take you on. So we really started working in that direction.
For Mark and Jim, sometimes sounds come from unexpected places. Cyberchump incorporates sampling in their music. Sampling is just a fancy word for recording real sounds and then incorporating them into the music. Digital technology allows a musician total control over the sample. One of the tracks that uses sampling was a cut from Dream's Groove called Love Offering. The piece on here I really, really love, and I think it's as great as anything, is Love Offering. Can you guys talk about that track?
Sure. Let's see. Do you want to talk about how you got the samples? Is that what I had? Well, first I'll talk about my part. I had my wife and I put together, Teresa LaMode, she put together kind of a song, that song, but just basic tracks to it, you know, sort of a little dance number. And then I think I handed it to Jim.
Well, actually, and then there's the guy named John Kruth, he plays a raita on it.
Now, what is a raita?
It's an Arabic flute.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the snake charming flute. It's what they play like in Morocco to charm the snake
it's got a double reed, so it's more like an oboe the way it's played. He played through the whole thing, and so it was this dance track with the raita going on it. And I took the raita and sampled it so I could just put it in certain parts and, you know, layered in the guitar parts, and then it needed more. And some lady had called me by mistake, evidently, and left that message.
There's no way.
Oh, that's true. I don't know who that lady is. I don't know why it was on my answering machine. I just took it and used it.
She was looking for a little love offering.
That's right.
Calling all the shepherds. Call their sheep. Calling all the shepherds.
That was the cut Love Offering from Dream's Groove. Other songs on the album include sampled voices. Mark explains the source on a cut called Feedback.
Feedback is on Inner Grooves, and it's a song in which, at least the woman who's in there, I used to do a television show, which is sort of called Joy Farm. It was sort of a comedy show, like a twisted black comedy kind of thing, Monty Python meets the Twilight Zone, and here in Milwaukee. And we had a number where you could call in and leave messages if you were a fan. And some old lady called thinking we were another channel, that we were Fox. And from what I could gather, she had been watching maybe some Hispanic person on X-Files or something. So she calls and she's very angry that they're speaking Spanish on her television. And she, you know, basically tells them, if you want to speak Spanish, go to Mexico.
Another intriguing sampled voice on the album was from a, quote, anonymous psychotherapist who spouts things like Alpha 009. This source didn't come from an accidental message left on an answering machine, but rather from a source much closer to home. And what's, who's the anonymous psychotherapist?
Oh, okay.
Good question.
Nobody know.
Okay. Actually, yeah, I'm kind of leaving that name out. But there is a psychotherapist that was around in the early 90s who was kind of propagating this idea that the Nazis had trained a bunch of doctors, and then they all kind of got hired. I think some Nazi, former Nazi people or German doctors had gotten hired by the government.
CIA
after the war, and one of them was named Dr. Greenbaum. And he really believed and was propagating this idea that if you said things like Alpha 009, that it would set off pre-programming that they had been given, that people had been programmed throughout the generations to do someone's bidding, and that if he were to, you know, if someone were to kind of say the words Alpha 009, that it would immediately control them and they would start to become robots for, you know, for whatever their bidding was. So he's saying these statements sort of in fear and explaining it to a group of psychotherapists at a convention. And we just thought it'd be funny to turn it around on him and, you know, have him be the menace. Now, given that I'm a psychologist in real life, people tend to think it's me, but it isn't.
Oh, okay.
We really did find it. Really is somebody else. We found this on a tape, but that's how I found it. Is, you know, I'm in the profession, so somebody had given me this tape, and it was a boss who was very, very serious, saying, and she told me, "You need to get on the bandwagon with this."
And we did.
Yeah, so we did.
Here's the track Nerve Nut. Was Nerve Nut, also from Dreams Groove, Cyberchump's 2000 release. Inner Grooves was their next album, released 2 years later in 2002.
Okay, as in some ways it feels like Inner Grooves of 2002, just a little bit more of what I would call space lounge frip jazz. Would you guys agree with that disagree?
Yeah, definitely. I was listening to an awful lot of jazz at that time, listening to a lot of Rahsaan Roland Kirk and Yusef Lateef.
And this is a man who used to say, "I hate that widdly diddly music."
That's right. You know, I kind of came from, like I said, a punk rock background or that sort of thing. So I used to, you know, back in the 70s, you didn't listen to people who really played their instruments. You know, they took all leads out of, you know, out of any solos were taken out of music back in those days. So I didn't listen to a lot of that stuff. It took me till later to start listening to bands like Mahavishnu Orchestra and to really go back to the later Miles Davis and that sort of stuff. So when I started doing that really in the late 90s and early 2000s, that's when at least I think my music started kind of having that flavor to it. And you were Jim was already there.
Been there, done that, and came back.
Yeah, I hear a lot of Robert Fripp in the solos there, Jim.
He's one of my favorites. And again, Fripp didn't use this device, but it's the only way I know how to get the sound he gets, and that is I use an Ebow a lot on that, which is, do you know what an Ebow is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, I've used it off and on, but on that particular album, I just seemed to fit everything really well.
By the second album, Inner Grooves, it was really clear that, you know, we knew how we worked together, and now we actually got the same studio equipment. We started buying the same studio monitors, and we both were recording digitally on MD-8s, Yamaha MD-8s, and really, you know, we had a lot of the same, I guess, media in terms of how we were putting things together and then mailing things back and forth to each other.
Sampling was used again on an intriguing track called Desert Keys, where an ordinary set of keys was used in a creative way. Can you guys talk about the track Desert Keys?
Oh, yeah. that one, actually, this is what I mean by experimental. In that particular case, for years, I have a set of keys, and I throw them up in the air, and I hear this jingling sound, and I thought, you know, someday I am going to make some music out of that. So one day I went down, and I threw them up in the air, and caught them and sampled that, and then I put a frame drum track to that and looped it, and that's what that song is based on. So that's where the keys part comes in, because the jangly sound actually is a set of keys being thrown in the air and caught.
That's neat.
Right. On that album and in that song, too, we really kind of threw the doors open and had a bunch of guest musicians come in. So I think on that one, Jason Todd is playing saxophone, soprano sax, and I think he just does a phenomenal job. We had him come in, and he just brought all his own effects, and the sound you hear isn't changed in any way. He pretty much gave it to us that way.
That was the track Desert Keys from Cyberchump's album Inner Grooves. The influence of jazz, a style at which at first Mark G.E. eschewed, became part of this album. We talked about a track called Space is the Case.
And it doesn't sound like a soprano sax.
Does he play on Space is the Case?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, it has that almost like a Coltrane kind of thing, but more space.
Yeah, and let's see.
What track is that?
Space is the Case.
Yeah, but number what track four? Is it on Abstract Air?
That's not on Abstract.
It is.
Inner Grooves.
Yeah, yeah. But here's the deal. Here's the secret.
He's asking a question. You don't know where this is coming from. We redid that song on. You can think about this for a minute. But we did that. Redid that song, or actually stripped it down to the bare essentials, and used it as a track on
Abstract Air.
Abstract Air.
Which track?
That's what we're trying to remember.
I remember. I wonder if anybody's ever known it. It's the second track. It's called Overlook.
Overlook. Right. If you listen in the background, see, basically what you hear in Overlook is the background of what's in Space is the Case. And now that you know it, if you listen to them side by side, I'm sure you can hear the backing tracks. But it was sort of a Steve Reich sort of experiment, I think.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went two ways. On Space is the Case, that one, I'm sort of playing a drum machine, but I'm playing it live. Like an instrument, you know, instead of just running it, playing all the pads on the drum machine and that sort of thing. So we're sort of improvising with that because we wanted it to have that jazz lounge feel.
Oh,
That was a track called Space is the Case from Cyberchump's second album, Inner Grooves. Cyberchump explains the influences behind this album.
And actually, that particular CD has four or five songs that literally are just improvs over a rhythm section that we came up with. And
Inner Grooves CD?
Yeah, the Inner Grooves. So that's, I think, the reason it's got that jazz flavor to it, because it really is put together that way.
Right. One of the things that we really like to do is we have an affinity for drones, you know. So we tend to get sort of a groove drone going on, and then we'll kind of build upon it.
Music by Cyberchump from the 2002 release Inner Grooves. You are listening to Cyberchump, Scientists in the Trees, an Eclectopian special. If you want more information about this show, you have to go to www.wvpubcast.org. If you want more information about Cyberchump, and I don't know why you would, just kidding, guys, you should go to www.cyberchump.com. We continue our conversation with Jim Skeel and Mark G.E., members of the electronic group called Cyberchump. Their next album, Abstract Air, released in 2003, took on a less rhythmic, more ambient style. Ambient is a mostly, but not exclusively, electronic contemplative style of music invented by Brian Eno. The group acknowledges Eno as an influence and talk about the method of working on the album.
We had both really been influenced, not just by sort of experimental electronica, but I think Jim and I really had a love for Brian Eno. So that kind of brought us into thinking about the studio as an instrument and thinking about atmosphere and that sort of thing. And if you listen to our music, there's an awful lot of sub-atmosphere going on in what we're doing. And then we sort of went backwards with Abstract Air, our dark ambient album. We really went back and started working with Jim. Jim is a big proponent of using loops, and he's been doing that for a long time. Do you want to talk a little bit about the loops?
I got into loops. I bought one of the early Friptronic devices, Electro-Harmonix 16-second delay, and I've used that in my music both live and in the studio off and on. But on Abstract Air, the whole album, I think, is pretty much a loop-based thing.
Here's the track Amniotic World from Abstract Air.
Thank you.
was the track Amniotic World. Let's go back to an earlier conversation where it was revealed that a track from Inner Grooves was stripped down and became a track on Abstract Air.
Does he play on Space Is the Case?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see.
What track is that?
Space Is the Case.
Yeah, but what track is it on Abstract Air?
That's not on Abstract Air.
Yeah, it is.
Inner Grooves.
Yeah, yeah. But here's the deal. Here's the secret.
He's asking you a question. You don't know where this is coming from.
Yeah.
We redid that song on you can think about this for a minute, but we redid that song, or actually stripped it down to the bare essentials and used it as a track on
Abstract Air.
Which track?
That's what we're trying to remember.
No, I remember. I wonder if anybody's ever known it. It's the second track. It's called Overlook.
Overlook.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Right. If you listen in the background, see, basically what you hear in Overlook is the background of what's in Space Is the Case. And now that you know it, if you listen to them side by side, I'm sure you can hear the backing tracks.
That was a track called Overlook. Okay, time for a pop quiz. Remember an earlier conversation about Mark having a violin? And although he couldn't play it, Jim suggested that they sample it and use it? Well, listen to this.
When I listened to Abstract Air, Steve Roach came to mind. Was that agree, disagree?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a compliment. And another place probably that's a little bit closer might be Vidna O'Mahna. Who's worked a lot with Steve Roach. And during the recording of that album, I just happened to bump into Vidna O'Mahna. I was in Portland, Oregon, and, just kind of looking for something to do one night, and all of a sudden we saw that Steve Roach and Vidna O'Mahna were going to be playing at a church. And we went there and checked it out, and it was incredible, incredible transportation music. I mean, you couldn't help but be lifted up, 3 feet in your seat after listening to it. It was really incredible. And I think that was pretty inspiring. So, that's where my head was at the time. I was listening to an awful lot of music that way, at least from my part of it.
And I'm the one that pushed to do that particular CD because we had been writing songs that were, more abstract and ambient than would fit on the Inner Groove CD. And so we set them aside two or three of those songs actually started from that period. And then Mark had been working on some film pieces. And so he had some sketches that we used for that and that also were kind of drony things. And then we had two pieces of music that go all the way back to when we first started. the one I was talking about where we did the sampling of the violins, and actually the whole piece, everything on there was done on a 16-second delay and just laid into a tape machine.
You're talking about Calling.
Calling.
Was the cut Calling. The final piece on Cyberchump's album Abstract Air shows the group's diversity. Many, many artists today have albums in which all the pieces sound the same. Even well-known artists like Steve Roach can have a sameness in their albums, which may provide continuity for some listeners, but for me, I want diversity. The broader the work, the better. Mark and Jim comment on the title track, Abstract Air.
And then the last song on there, Abstract Air, was a piece that Mark and I started back then that actually Mark was going to use in his practice. We were trying to come up with something that would be meditative and contemplative. And the basic track for that was already laid out. In fact, it was like, what, 30 minutes long or something?
Right. And I think it might be one of the few things we have that's in a major key.
Yeah.
Was that track originally a sketch for Inner Grooves or...
No, that was actually this was going back to like 1988, I think. I think Mark had when did you go back to Milwaukee?
87.
Yeah, I think he had gone back to Milwaukee, and of course he'd come to visit, and we weren't doing anything formal, but he had this idea of he wanted to have this music so he could use it for helping people to relax. In fact, it was just going to be called Relaxation, and one side of it would be the music with Mark talking over it, telling people how to relax, and then the second side would just be the music. And that, I don't know, did you ever do anything with that?
No. Kind of gave it to some clients. That's about it.
And so it was just sitting around, and I always kind of liked the piece. And it was a loop-based thing that I did on a sequencer. And we thought, well, let's pick that. You know, Mark was kind of reluctant, and I said, well, let's just add some stuff to it. And turned out to be the prettiest piece on the...
What I really like about it is... my notes here is that unlike Roach or Vidno Mana, who the CDs will end with the same kind of cosmic emptiness or the great void, This ends almost like an Eno piece in that it has hope. It's sad, but there's still a hope to it. Would you guys agree with that?
That's great, because the one thing that we decided wasn't working with the relaxation thing was that I can't do anything that's straight up pretty. I got to have a wee bit of edge to it or something.
Right.
And I think that, And actually, Mark added a part to it that he was trying to get this sense, and I think he caught it, where you're maybe standing on a hilltop in the fall, and you're overlooking at the night maybe a carnival or something. And it just that you know how you feel in the fall, things are changing, and it's kind of sad but bittersweet. You know, I kind of think that's the way that whole thing came out.
That was the title track from Abstract Air, the 2003 release by Cyberchump. Cyberchump's next album, Scientists in the Trees, was released in 2004. What's unique about this album is that it's a true internet collaboration, each working separately on ideas and then emailing them to the other person. Other technologies, like music software, also helped shape the album.
The new album, what happened was Mark had mentioned, hey, there's this thing called Acid. I go, what's that? And, you know, it's a computer program. So we both bought it, and we were just going to use that for rhythm, and we ended up writing the whole damn thing on it, you know, basically. And that was truly an internet collaboration because we could send the files back and forth over the internet.
Yeah, that really got us into the software and loop programs. Loop programs fit for us because we had been working in loops for so long anyway, and Jim had done quite a bit of that. So it just really fit in the way that we thought about music, and allowed us to really record in atmosphere, you know, sub-atmosphere, have a lot more control over how we did things. So it started really changing things, and now it's completely, almost completely internet. I mean, we get together a couple times a year, one just because we like to, but we and then some of the mixing really makes sense to do in the room together. Usually it's more finalization that we do at one of the studios, but for the most part, the writing and most of the playing of instruments and recording of the loops and all of that stuff is done privately.
Oh, you guys talk about scientists in the trees that track presidents from another planet?
That one, the name, Mark, see, I sent him the file on it with the name Presidents from Another Planet. He took it completely differently. I named it that because I thought, and this was just as the Gulf War was starting, that we, you know, if you took President Saddam Hussein and President George W. Bush and you go like, what are these two guys up to? We need presidents from another planet. That was kind of where I was coming from.
I see the title as meaning that there are these presidents, like about nine or so, from another planet that have landed here. And they all have different outfits and, you know, different, like, you know what I mean, accoutrements and hats. And I don't know why, but I like the idea that there's nine different presidents.
How about the cut signals, which begins the CD?
I started that thing, and I basically put in a bunch of things that I thought sounded like various signals, you know, like bleeps you might get from outer space.
We thought it was a good opener because it has a very electronica sound.
Thank you.
one of the big things on scientists, there were a lot of weird esoteric drones or bells or chimes in it. And on a couple of songs, I literally wrote the melodies to these background washes, and they don't go in a, you know, a stock pattern. So you end up writing a very complex piece of music because you're listening to this drone in the background that's changing and trying to structure your song to it. And, Helium Device is almost totally that way.
Right. Helium Device really sort of started as a dark ambient piece that might have been on Abstract Air. And then when you got a hold of it, it really became a very funky piece.
Scientists in the Trees is a pretty far place from Dreams Groove.
Right.
Yes. I mean, it really is.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I guess it could, you could run the four CDs in a loop. There you go. But and then you would have that experience. But it does seem pretty far afield from the first album. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. And I think part of that is I'm much more fascinated with the recording studio than I am with live performance. I've done both. And, you know, if you ask me, you want to go out and play in front of 100 people, or you want to sit in your studio and work on music, I'd rather sit in a studio. And a lot of my fascination is the technology itself and how you can manipulate sound. I think each CD sounds different because we've gotten to a greater control over the music, and or not over the music, but over the sound itself. And one of the things I think we're ending up doing now, Mark and I've always been pretty rhythmic. Even with Abstract Air, there's rhythm in it, but there's not a lot of percussive rhythm. And I think where we're going now is using melodies and using them rhythmically. So, I mean, we're just getting more and more rhythmic. Everything's becoming a rhythm.
This concludes Cyberchump, Scientists in the Trees, an Eclectopian special. I'm Jim Lang. I hope you've enjoyed it. First, I'd like to thank Jim Skeel and Mark G.E., a.k.a. Cyberchump, for their time,
their great interview, and most of all, their music. Find out more about their new album, Secrets to Tell You, at cyberchump.com. If you want more information about this show and Eclectopia, you got to go to wvpubcast.org. Or simply go to eclectopia.org and you'll link directly to the page. James Mohammed is Director of Radio Services, Carol Carter's webmaster. Thanks to Lee Rosenecker, and thanks also to Ernesto Magneto. And always, 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 I say thanks to you, the gentle listeners of this and other programs on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Jim Lang. This has been Cyberchump, Scientists in the Trees, an Eclectopian special.